movie a privilege simply because he...
...in reducing illegal immigration at our border seen in recent months is almost entirely due to the leadership of President Trump.
Boy, a lot of people say, and I think there's truth to it, Donald Trump is the wall. But will a physical wall now be the trade-off for DACA? What a great privilege to go to the VIP line and welcome Senator Cory Gardner to 710 KNUS. It'll be a privilege simply because he's one of Colorado's two senators, but he has taken a leadership role in the Senate that is way beyond what you normally see from a freshman senator. One of those areas has been North Korea, where the senator's been looking around corners now for years, way ahead of the pack when it comes to this threat and what to do about it. And then obviously want to talk about DACA, illegal immigration, given the fact that the senator is from Colorado, so deeply affected. Senator, welcome back to 710 KNUS.
Well, thanks for having me, Dan, and congratulations on this new time slot.
Yeah, and appreciate you being part of the first show. It's, you know, it kind of feels like home because afternoon drive's been where I've been most of the years, and Craig and I had 8.5 years together in afternoon drive, and I know you were a very active part of that as well, so feels good to have you here.
Well, thank you for having me a part of it.
Well, thanks. Hey, yeah, let's start with DACA. And tell me if my premise is way off. My premise as I look at this is, wow, this could be so good for America in this way. And that is, there will have to be the kind of trade-offs that I think the founding fathers envisioned. And if progressives want DACA to live on in legislative form, they'll have to be willing to make concessions. And so far, their attitude, I think, toward you in the Senate and toward the president has been, you know, no retreat, no surrender. We're never going to give an inch, resistance to the death. So are we now going to see some healthy give and take?
Well, I hope that we can have a healthy debate, a healthy dialogue, and then ultimately passage of bipartisan legislation to address our immigration crisis in this country. When you speak specifically about DACA, I actually think we have to have a solution for people, for children who are brought here through no fault of their own, at a very young age. I mean, my gosh, we don't charge my 4-year-old, 5-year-old son for walking across the neighbor's lawn with trespass. Mm-hmm. That's got to be part of the solution, just as border security needs to be part of our solution, just as fixing the entry-exit system in this country needs to be part of the solution. And I hope that over the next several weeks, months, we have time to fix this and address so many other issues that I hear about day to day across the four corners of Colorado.
Isn't that the natural trade-off? In other words, you know, legislative DACA in exchange for a true border security, whether it's a physical wall here, some other technology there, whatever it takes to actually control that darn border. Isn't that a natural trade-off?
Well, I think, you know, I don't even look at this as a trade-off situation. What I look at it as people who believe we should have a immigration fix, believe that we need to address it for children who are brought here through no fault of their own. They believe we need to fix border security, even the Gang of Eight Senate bill that was voted on in the Senate in 2013, I believe it was, right around 2013, had border security increases in it. So I hope that this is part of a natural dialogue when it comes to what should be a good immigration policy that this country can set.
Well, you're right. I mean, if we were talking about a rational conversation between two reasonable, well-intentioned groups, you're right. There shouldn't be have to be any trade-off. Everybody should see it roughly the same way. But my view is different. My view is that the Democrats have not wanted the border fixed. If they wanted it fixed, they would have fixed all of this when they had the House, the Senate, and the White House.
Well, and there's a good argument to be made that when they had a chance to do it, unfortunately, they did not do it. But I think that we've got to take this chance now to put in place something that both sides agree to. Mm-hmm. And if some people want to look at that as a trade-off, I guess that's the way they're going to look at it. I guess I look at it as a common-sense approach to our overall picture of immigration, from the needs of agriculture, who's been asking for immigration reform. I just got off the phone with some producers in southeastern Colorado who had significant challenges finding people to harvest melons this year. And I talked to rural communities that can't find doctors to practice in their communities. And I talked to, you know, the children who are in my daughter's class that have parents who came here without documentation, but they were babies when they were brought here. We can fix this. We can do it together. And I think we can do it in a way that makes America proud.
And what would that look like, Senator? I know you think about these things in infinite detail. What would the fix look like if you had the magic wand?
So again, I think you have border security. That's got to be a piece of it. And, you know, if that's a wall where it makes sense, then that's a wall. If it's an electronic perimeter, then that's an electronic perimeter. If it's a surveillance or personnel, then that's what you do. That makes sense. So we fixed the piece dealing with children who should be able to stay here, brought here through no fault of their own, and make sure that that is taken care of. We fixed the entry-exit system of the 11 and 12 million people without documentation. 42% came to the United States on a legal visa, a valid visa, but overstayed their visit. We didn't have the capacity or the policies in place to address what happens after they overstay their visa. That needs to be fixed, making sure that we have a system in place so that employers are able to find the labor pool that they need. They ought to be able to hire Americans, and if they can't, we need to make sure that they have the ability to hire people once they've exhausted that effort. But they need to know who they're hiring is legal, and a system that actually works with that documentation. So I think we can have a system that builds on each one of those elements, and I hope that that's something that we can address over the next several months.
Senator Cory Gardner, our special guest, what would the DACA side look like to you, a legislative DACA? Would it be any different than the president's DACA executive order?
Well, I think it's important to point out that I think President Obama, we're in this position today because of President Obama, that he issued an executive order instead of going through Congress, where it should have been. This debate should have been held. And as a result, I think you had the White House put in a position where the courts were going to strike down or could strike down, very likely strike down, this executive order. And then what? The rightful place for this debate is in Congress. And so that's what we ought to do, and that's why it's important to have this debate, what DACA looks like. You know, you set the age for people, be that the DREAM Act, which I support, the ability to move forward on something like that. That could be a fix. There's others out there, like Congressman Kaufman's idea, Carlos Corbellos from Florida. There are bipartisan ideas out there that make a lot of sense, and I think the vast majority of the American people support. But let's start with the premise that this is a rule of law issue, and Congress is the right body to have this discussion.
Oh, no question about that, and I think that's probably 80-20 agreement in America. But then you get down to some of the real tough points, such as, would you envision a legislative DACA granting citizenship?
Well, I think if you had it under the time frames as envisioned, I think for those who are young and brought here as children, yes, you can do that. And I think that's one of the areas where I think there is bipartisan support.
And I think you're right about that. Senator Cory Gardner, I guess, want to shift at this point to North Korea if you have a couple of more minutes. I know your time is short, but you've been way ahead of the curve on North Korea. Obviously, you know, what just happened, unless you disagree with the premise, was momentous. Where do you see things with North Korea right now? Are we closer to military action? And what's left in the toolkit before military action, which would carry such heinous consequences, would be necessary?
Yeah. In the past 24 hours, I've had detailed and in-depth conversations with Secretary Tillerson, Admiral Harry Harris, our commander of PACOM Pacific Command. Just got off the phone earlier today with Ambassador Haley and just now, minutes ago, with General Robinson, who is the head of NORTHCOM. They're tasked with defending the homeland from a missile strike, be it from North Korea or whoever. And it's becoming very clear that the actions that Kim Jong-un are taking are more and more provocative. I've stated before that I believed his missile launch over Japan, and this was prior to the most recent nuclear detonation, was designed to drive conflict. And Nikki Haley said that Kim Jong-un appears to be begging for war. We still have diplomatic runway left, and we need to use that. We need to increase our sanctions. We need to increase the penalties on China for doing business with North Korea. And I think we need to make sure that we are naming and shaming businesses around the globe, wherever they are, who do business with North Korea. We should have a full economic blockade of North Korea. We should shut off their petroleum reserves. Now, we have got to make it clear that a nuclear program in North Korea is unacceptable, and there is no hesitation about that. And we can stand for nothing less than denuclearization. I believe we can do it peacefully. Obviously, there are plans in place to address what would happen should it come to conflict. But let's hope and pray that that doesn't happen, because there is room left on the diplomatic side, and we have to exercise that. But to have a continued threat of Japan and Korea, it's going to drive nuclear proliferation throughout the region. You've got Kim Jong-un, who my guess is will, in the coming days, attempt to test an ICBM, full-blown ICBM missile. And, the consequence is real. Now, I actually think that perhaps Kim Jong-un is starting to take these rash actions because he's starting to feel the pressure, that it's starting to get to him, and he's trying to lash out in the only way he knows how. And perhaps this is actually the start of a way forward when it comes to denuclearization.
So in other words, starting to lash out in order to push America to more quickly acknowledge what I'm sure he reads in our press. You have a lot of prominent Americans on the left saying that the U.S. has to accept a nuclear North Korea. There's really no alternative. So you think he's getting desperate and he's trying to push that ultimate conclusion to happen much faster?
Right. Well, and what we've seen from the left, like Iran, take Iran, for example, you act bad enough for long enough, you get what you want. And that's what Kim Jong-un is hoping to get. He'll act bad enough. The United States will make some kind of a deal that guarantees or enshrines a nuclear program. It'll be wink, wink, nudge, nudge, peaceful. And that's what Iran got.
Mm-hmm.
We cannot fall for that again. We have to make it clear that there is no way Kim Jong-un will be left with a nuclear key. It's unacceptable, and we won't stand for it. And we have to engage the world community, the global community, and in global embargoes, interdiction of ships. Make sure that no nation around the globe accepts foreign labor from North Korea, which is just basically a violation of human rights used to prop up the Kim Jong-un regime. And we've got to bring pressure to China and Russia to do more and more and more.
Well, I think you're obviously right about the economic blockade, but it has to be total. And to get that, aren't you going to have to cut off trade with China or otherwise do something dramatic to convince China to go along? Because, yes, that economic blockade is clearly the best chance to avoid war. But how do you get China to go there?
Well, and that's why we have to name and go after and sanction those entities, individuals and businesses within China that are doing business with North Korea. I've introduced bipartisan legislation that names 10 businesses in China who are still doing business with North Korea. And in fact, these 10 businesses are responsible for 30% of the North Korean economic activity that China has. 90% of North Korea's entire economy is contingent on China, 30% of which are, these 10 companies are responsible for. So let's sanction them. Let's bar them from any dollar-denominated transaction using our financial system. Let's make sure that we freeze their assets here in the United States. We deny anybody a visa that comes into the United States who's with one of these businesses. Let's figure out ways to make it painful for anybody who makes the bad choice of doing business with North Korea instead of the United States.
Well, and as you know, yesterday, Senator, and I've got about 60 seconds worth of questions left, if you can spare us that time. Yesterday, the president referred to possibly cutting off trade with China. Would you support that as a last resort to try to push China into doing what it should do?
Well, I think the United States shouldn't hesitate to impose secondary sanctions on China or any entity that does business with North Korea. But I think what we focus on right now are those businesses who are doing business with China, with North Korea. We know there's over 5,000 of these businesses. Let's target them, and I believe the government of China will get the point.
Final question. Do you agree with Steve Bannon, at least as quoted in that off-the-record interview, do you agree with Steve Bannon that there really isn't a military option in North Korea? Their ability to kill so many in Seoul so quickly really means game over for us militarily?
Well, we are bound by a mutual defense treaty to have a military option with North Korea when it comes to our relationship with South Korea. That's our obligation under our mutual defense treaty. So there is a military option. But the goal has to be peaceful denuclearization. And the goal has to be recognition that a conflict with North Korea would cost horrific lives and result in casualties that have to be avoided.
Mm. Grateful for your time today. Any other message to the folks out here?
Look, I think we've got a great August ahead of us, focused on economic growth, cutting taxes, making sure that we're aware and taking care of the folks who are desperately in need in Texas with the disaster that they've been through, and making sure that we get these policies on North Korea right. So we've got a full schedule ahead of us.
Well, thanks for your time today. Keep up the great work.
Thanks, Dan. Thanks.
Thank you, Senator Cory Gardner. Appreciate that. 303-696-1971. Would love your thoughts, your reaction to the interview, any part of that you may want to dive into. I do think, and I understand there are some, and some on this radio station, who don't have my positive view of Senator Gardner. I'll take it further. I mean, I think it is extremely fortunate for Colorado that Cory Gardner is our senator, because by virtue of his skill set, you know, and the fact that he has taken the initiative to put himself in these leadership positions. Do you think all those folks today, Mattis, all those other people, are going to be talking to him in this depth if he is not head of the Republican Senatorial Committee, et cetera. I think all of that is an advantage for Colorado in two ways. First of all, I think it provides you more access, means more opportunity to push Colorado's agenda. But the other is that I think we want people like Cory Gardner having a greater influence on our national trajectory. And so, again, I think we're lucky to have him. I know not everybody agrees, and we always entertain that conversation. Appreciate his time today. 303-696-1971, the number. Kirk, what's the game plan? Captain Kirk now. You know, after all these years with Casey Bloyer, such a phenomenal producer, we now have Kirk Woodland producing the afternoon show, who is a tremendous young talent. We spent election night together here in studio. He produced for Craig and me.